Sleepy. Sorry?
Is there anything I could do to stay alert?
Well, it's a natural thing. When you feel sleepy, you sleep and then you wake up. You know, most people are running in on adrenaline. You know, so when you actually unhook, you know, you go flat. That's pretty normal. But what you try and do is stop, don't struggle with it. Generally, the feeling of it is generally a kind of a, you know, everything's kind of closing down and closing in. Going fetal. So maybe it's like keeping your eyes open and widening. Perhaps walking, moving around gently, and just being with that feeling, which is quite unpleasant, you know, because everything wants to kind of curl up, not be awake. So, you know, just being a little bit awake. You know. If you move, it helps. Gentle movement. You deliberate, like, keeping your eyes open helps. Consciously reducing your breathing helps. That is, if you breathe out gently and then hold your breath 5 seconds longer than you'd normally breathe in. So, you know, you get the first breathe out, and then generally with sleepiness, your breath pattern goes very shallow. Right? So you stop that, just breathe out, and then wait. You get a little bit of pressure builds up, wait. Give it another 5 seconds. And then as you breathe in, try to restrict the breathing a little bit. So it's not, but then breathe out. Get to the place where you're about to breathe in and wait. Give it another 5 seconds and then breathe in. So that that actually will certainly, it will give you something more conscious to focus on. But it's not to make yourself purple in the face. It's like a little bit longer. Because then you do strengthen, it actually strengthens the breath energy. It's like you start to massage it a bit. And that it seems strange, because normally when we think we need to breathe more, actually if you breathe less, it would be more wakeful. And it gives you something conscious to focus on, like, you know, the end of the out-breath. And then stop. You can count to 20. 25, 30. You do that, you know, 5 minutes or so, and then see the results. Yes?
What's the difference between relaxation and meditation?
Huh?
The difference between relaxation and meditation.
Well, it depends what you mean by relaxing, really. Meditation is a very conscious, carefully supervised relaxation, whereas other relaxations can be fairly, you know, heedless, you know, or sleepy. You know. So it's a conscious relaxation based, because it's a relaxation based upon, you know, letting the mind, relaxing the mind from its habitual programs, drives, pushes, but you relaxing the mind. It's like letting the mind slip out of its programs. Whereas much other forms of relaxation is just to add a new program, or to make the mind kind of lose the mind. Meditation, you don't lose the mind. You begin to refine the mind out of its compulsiveness. The difference between the mind as awareness and the mind as activities. Most of us know the mind as activities. That is, thinking, emotions, psychologies, functions, organizing, you know, some kind of feedback of feelings, emotions, thoughts, attitudes. That's mental activity. There's also the mind which is awareness, which is that which can be present with activity. Now when we relax in meditation, essentially what you're doing is simplifying the activities, calming the activities, lessening the activities, but actually enhancing the quality of awareness. So that you start to prioritize awareness before activity. Not to discount activity, but you change the priorities. And that can be very restful, but also very bright.
How can you deal with discomfort kind of in the body? Like if the breath doesn't kind of feel like a safe place to be, if the mind is kind of relating to the body with fear, rather than kind of detaching.
Well, when you have the sense of not safety, generally you would go to just a sort of sense of where there is safety, like here. And then, okay, you've got something, and then, hey, what's right in front of me? Physically right now. Okay, or behind. Or you might in fact induce reflections that are about feeling safe, like, right now nobody's on my back. You know, right now everything behind me is okay. Now, you know, we made those in our heads, but our bodies don't necessarily know it, because you can have these kind of defense or uncertainty programs almost at a cellular level, even though you know, yeah, it's okay, but on a cellular level your body is kind of stuck in this particular uncertainty threat thing. So you have to kind of like actually embody the sense of safety, which means coming to these places where it feels a little bit nervous and you say, okay, let's be with this, you know, okay. And then it's widening just around these little places where we suddenly experience a sense of, you know, hey, well, you know, wait a minute. And then at that particular place, now, where's your center? Where's the ground? And then, okay, you feel that place. Can you just kind of take that and then start to widen a little bit? Yeah. So it helps when we do have definite safe boundaries, you know, like you're in your room or something and, you know, you feel comfortable there. So the immediate environment is safe, comfortable. Then you've also got to deal with this virtual reality that we carry around in us of our uncertainties and stuff like that. So then just coming into it very, very slowly. Find the place where you do feel your body does feel safe. Could be your hands, you know. Could be your bum. Could be your back. Stay there. If you really got that, then see if you can move from there to more the whole body. We might find, well, actually here feels really quite agitated up here, so let's leave that, and here feels a bit stronger, so be there, and then maybe gradually we could sort of come up to places where we feel less secure. But you always got to give the embodied sense a place of safety, yeah, so that you don't just think it, your body really knows it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It was that the whole sense of the body feels sort of contracted. So it's kind of difficult to find the safe place.
Well, there is safe, otherwise you'd be psychotic by now. It's not that evident, you know. But say, for example, the back, you know, because the back doesn't really make itself. Mostly the front areas that are all the lively areas, which is where, of course, all the confrontations happen. Yeah. If you feel like your back or your spine, and if you kind of lean back on something so you can really feel it. Yeah. And just, okay, here I'm really, I'm really there with it. And then this kind of overall sense of offering well-being. Standing on your feet, soles of your feet. Now, you know, again, most of our conflicting experiences happen, face, front, and is where the conflicting comes. Don't get much coming up through your feet. Nobody's ever had a go at me through my feet. It's always the face. It's like, and that's the bit that feels more threatened, because that's got the bullseye on it. The feet are pretty, feet on the ground, trying to feel the arch, under arch, standing. And then that, which, we use the metaphors, stand your own ground as a sense of, I'm strong, I'm solid. Well, because that metaphor is quite relevant. When your feet are on the ground and you really, then there is a sense of, I'm strong, I'm okay. Focus on that sense. And as long as it takes, as long as you want, that it becomes something that you can keep coming back to and feel some sense of refuge in that. Thank you.
I think actually your answer just now answered some of my questions that I had. There's another aspect, because it comes from when you direct your attention to the breath and you find that it's perhaps quite contracted or shallow, and then there's the thought to extend it or lengthen it or ask it to let go, but it won't. And continuing with that only seems to make it feel more contracted and more tired. And I think from other instructions I've had from you before, what I've done to work with that is to go to the contracted feeling in itself and just see if I can be with that and put create some space around that. There's still this, sometimes there's quite a fine line between sort of even offering goodwill, looking for space, something steady, easy, and still having a subtle wanting for the difficulty to change that sustains some kind of holding. And I wonder whether you could say anything about that.
Yeah. Well, as I think I've got from you, it's quite that some of these points are quite subtle, but because we, maybe sit for hours or so, then the subtle pressure does build up, and the subtle intonations do become have quite a strong effect. So, once you start to sense, this kind of getting into this double bind, this bound situation, okay, let's just back off the whole program. even when we use the word like meditation, even that can bring up a certain, got to do something, get focused, get quiet, get sorted. And even though, that's the long-term result, it sometimes means that one is not very, the process of doing it, we try to jump further rather than actually gradually, do a process. And the first thing is just a sense, just literally the whole sense of being embodied. Before we're breathing, or it may come and go, and maybe, you know, the instruction would be, well, just don't make a thing out of breathing, just sense the body, and sense the, trying to sense more like a completeness of the body, or as much as you can, and get the mind to feel happy with that. Yeah. Happiness is a very important development line in meditation. The first kind of happiness just comes with a sense of relief that, oh wow, not doing that, you know, shut the door, switch the sounds off, whatever it is, fed the dog. Oh, that lasts for like a little while before starts. So, you know, you're going to catch that moment of, and really see if we can kind of lengthen our time in that experience. It's like all the things you don't have to do now, right now. So, you just start to play with it, like, I don't have to fix the roof, I don't have to milk the cow, I don't have to, you know, so you keep coming back and reiterating that. Because whatever the topics are, it keeps coming back to that same, you know, whether it's milking the cow, fixing the roof, watering the dog, or whatever it is, it still comes back to the same nerve ending of, you know, and you want to actually come to that place and keep getting to that nerve ending and say, it's alright. And in fact, the more times you can fire that nerve and meet it with it's alright, you don't get it through just backing off. You can actually go into that place and just keep firing it, and every time it goes, and then that nerve learns what you, in your head you know, but your nerve doesn't know. It knows because at that moment of compulsion it wakes up, and that very moment when it's firing, going, all right, you know. Until you get that feeling of, oh, this is just really all right. And the relief. And from relief comes a sense of simplicity. Because we didn't do a whole kind of meditation marathon Olympics, you know, through the hoops, over the hurdles, and so forth. We just sat there, going crazy, and feeling all right about it. You know? And you get a sense of simplicity. And simplicity itself is happy. There's nothing much to do, really. It's just that, and just that. So simplicity gives you happiness. And so before we kind of add too much structure to meditation, you know, most of us are so much structure already that your entry is really into how to destructure, deconstruct all these almost involuntary reflexes that we've got built in, you know. And then just trying to maybe, or the only thing is just trying to at least sort of stay loosely speaking upright. And then the contentment. And from the contentment comes that sense of, because this contentment and relief, the happiness that's not born of something happening from the outside, they're born from something within me going, I don't have to. So it's really grounding kind of happiness. And then, you know, when you get the sense of the happiness of that, and the Buddha actually described it, he said you have to get to the place, those places, before your body will relax. And if you dwell upon that, you know, and it becomes a little more, it's not blissed out, some sense of ease, your body starts to feel it, you know, because we all know that when we're angry we feel bodily, when we're depressed you feel it bodily, when you feel happy, when you feel loving, there's a bodily flushes that go along with that. So we get to those places where your body starts to feel really kind of quite loose and at ease, yeah? And check in, what's it like to have a body? How do you know you've got one? Warm, certain tingles, pressures, and it's that repeated, well, that's breathing. It comes to you. You know, it's almost like when you prepare the ground, the breathing will come to you. And you know, maybe sometimes we, because you know, one looks for what's the meditation thing to do. Well, it's mindfulness of breathing. So you know, but unfortunately, most of us are so programmed into doing that we don't really take the time to just prepare the ground and let it happen. So you almost want to say, I don't want to know about breathing, you know, until it really comes in and says, hey, 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 what about me? And then just a little bit, just to set the vague system to kind of flow. So you get an energy that has got something happy, maybe too strong a word, but something pleasing to it. And then quite naturally your mind will it be interested in that. And because it's happiness that releases the contraction, not any effort of the will. And so, you know, naturally, in a way, we kind of, with our attention, you can sort of direct, hey, go to there. You have to have something put there. What we're putting there is a sense of happiness. And then that will cause the contraction to relax. You can't say, relax, relax, relax. Because, you know, even on a subtle level, but when it's happy, it relaxes by itself. I think it's a really thing to emphasize. Happiness kind of seems shallow and trivial, but it isn't. It's very deep. And you can't say, I'll have 7 minutes of happiness, then 15 minutes of vipassana, and then I can't construct really. You just have to go with it. You know? I mean, guess what loving kindness is about? It's about happiness, really. It's feeling that how nice it is to feel warm towards people, and how nice it is when people feel warm towards us. You know? It's not charity as such, it's just well being. Yes?
When, if one reaches that state of pleasure and contentment, how to deal with the feeling that arises saying, hey, I really like this, I want to stay here?
Well, you notice that's pretty natural. Yeah. But, you know, you mean, you notice that when you do that, there's a kind of tightening up that occurs, and that happiness is less, it doesn't spread. You know, it's like when you feel that and think, I want more of it, that quality of want more starts to crowd in and tighten everything up. So we start to lose it. Yeah. So that, you know, it's something you have to, your system has to learn, because it's natural to want to cling to happiness, want more of it. But then you notice how that begins to spoil it. So to keep letting go. And if you feel it on bodily level, it's just the sense of the relief of pressure. You know, like, you know, my hand is quite happy. Palm hand's quite happy. You know, back hand's getting a little bit fed up with holding it up right now. But if it keeps bodily, you know, the Buddha said he didn't allow the happiness to take over his mind. The same, it's there, and it can cause the sense of nerves to relax, the mind to open. That's the purpose of it. Now, you know, to sustain that in the mental position, we have to practice things like compassion and kindness. Because as soon as you close it down to, I've got mine, then it starts to contract again. So it's very much more like a an all being. You know. And then the more you give it away, the better it gets. Widening. Yeah.
I was just wondering, some time ago I went to a retreat and the teacher suggested us to this practice of developing it's okay. So it's okay, somebody, you're going out of your place and you missed the bus, it's okay. Somebody's snatching your purse, okay, developing it, okay. So one day I was waiting for a bus and I remember this practice, this just in terms of the it's alright. I remember this practice and because the bus was not coming, so I was going, it's okay. The bus is not coming. It's okay. At the end of it, it's okay. The bus is okay. So I think there is a possibility of jumping, of being. I wanted to be so there that you are not acknowledging the fact that actually you are saying it's not okay. The passage between your mind and your heart has not happened. Just wanted to about the it's okay.
Yeah, I think there's just, you know, these are skillful means. For every skillful means, going to be a total solution. It just helps. You know, it's like you're approaching from one angle, and it works. But then, of course, what happens is that sooner or later, there's dead spots where it doesn't reach, or because it's only a window. You know, it's not the whole thing. So, you know, it's okay. It's okay the bus isn't coming. Okay. It's okay for me to get totally flaming furious if that bus not coming. That's okay too. You know, it's just trying to widen your you know, from the reactivity that we have to tighten this up. So. Okay, here's the feeling of feeling really frustrated and upset and annoyed by all that. Yeah. How does that feel? So it's kind of when it gives you a way of putting everything on a level ground with no priorities. But then sooner or later a priority must occur out of that. You know, but first we just put it there. It's okay. Well, right. Yeah, that's okay, but I'm still going to do this. You know, but you're not acting from a place of compulsion. You're acting from a place of clarity. Understand? You know, you've been clear. Okay, yeah, but even though it's all okay, on a conventional level, I'm going to do this. That's what seems best.
In daily practice, day after day of meditation, sometimes, up and down and the right, the meditation is neither happy nor angry, or the struggle of sitting and sitting for the hour or whatever. But, you know, I get up sometimes and I think, okay, I've done my outbreak, carry on doing something else. But then I start thinking, this meditation practice is getting a dull quality to the sitting, and inside me arises that, well, maybe, you know, I'm going to sharpen up, or I'm not okay, or I need to change something, or do I sit with it stay? I don't know, I struggle to understand which is more compassionate for me.
Well, the dullness can be just the, when it's mental, you get bored, same old thing, routine, an hour, every day, same thing. The disadvantage of that is that the mind starts to ho-hum, here we go, and doesn't really consciously you know, wake up to that, you see, so another thing. So you get that kind of dull, which is boredom, which is a slight, boredom is a slight quality of negativity. Don't really want to do it. But I suppose otherwise I feel guilty. Or, you know, I feel I've let myself down or I haven't done the right thing. Well, yeah, you can't operate from that. You know, you can't operate from just a feeling of obligation and guilt. So, if the dullness is based upon more like a psychological state, then you start to question, why am I sitting here? You know, what is sitting here? What else is there to do? What would be really fun to do right now? You know, why is that more interesting than this? You start to just use questioning to bring energy. So, and then generally, you know, when one meditates, most everything else seems more attractive than this. Yeah. But then when you go out and do one of them, you think, well, yeah, so what? But it's a kind of gloss, what we call Mara, is the illusion. Suddenly, you know, if I only had one of those, I'd be happy, you know, of course. If I only did this, I'd be fine, of course. But, you know, when you start to look into that quality of what would it be like if? Now, even though, you know, going to the cinema or whatever other isn't going to make you permanently happy, you know that on your head level. What does it mean right now? It means getting into life, getting into something a little more interesting. What would that be like right now? Just bring that feeling into your heart right now. So you use this kind of process of investigation. And then when you feel that sense of it being alive, it would be colourful, it would be something coming into me rather than just sitting in this sterile state. Oh. Wow, sterile state, that felt like something. You know, you know, your body starts to realize, hey, now you're talking about real things. They're all bored. Need something to come into me. Need something lively. Oh. When you say that, what wakes up? Bring it back. Say it again. And you start to feel these particular somatic energies start to wake up. And then you can actually, you know, you're in fact addressing your needs at a very primary level. Because nothing that we see or touch, taste or hear goes into the mind. All that goes into the mind is the mental impressions that those things create for us. So if you bring up the mental impression, like, what's it like, you know, when you come home and your dog jumps up to see you with happiness? Isn't that nice? Oh yeah, you know. To feel trust and affection. So take that, bring that in. You know, what's it like to feel that somebody really needed you right now? You did something very important. Oh, wonderful. You know, so you start to look at the bits that need to wake up. Because quite a lot of meditation is really has this sense of just stop, quiet, and down. I say it myself, stop, quiet, and down. But after a while, that becomes numbing, like an anesthetic. You don't really want to stop and quiet and down, but you don't really want to just go out doing stuff. Now, is it a way to stop, quiet, and down, and then start to wake up within that? And the means of that is investigation. Ask yourself, you know, what's the feeling of this now? Stuck, trapped, stuck here, doing my duty for another 58 minutes. Thought out of my mind, I've been doing this for 5 years. Yuck, you know. And then, what do you really need now? Oh, fresh air, swimming, sun, running around. Ah, you get that energy. Okay, now, just get that energy, be with that. And feel what starts to open up in your body. So you can, you know, skillful fantasy. Investigation. Because it helps to free up some of these inevitable limitations that come into any practice at all. There's inevitable limitations. So, you know, sitting is limited, standing limited, walking limited. Any instruction can only say so much. Eventually, in order to really integrate, you have to come to the process of experimenting and questioning. And any meditation can be quite a lively place. And that's really what insight's about. If it's more like physical dullness, that is, you actually do feel sleepy, dizzy, faint, foggy, tired, then it's just, you know, what I've said to the other question, just about, you know, keeping your eyes open, standing up, limiting your breathing, moving around a little bit. Yeah. The two could be, you know, maybe a bit of both, actually.
We hear an awful lot about trying to change whatever we see in our meditation, but I actually thought meditation was about observation, particularly their observation, just accepting whatever happens.
Yeah, it's like you have to. So you can have quite a limited, your awareness can be over quite a limited range, you know. So we're not, you know, we might be aware, for example, of certain areas of our body or certain areas of our mind, and you can witness those. But what needs to be done is a sense of actually extending your awareness to include all of it. What tends to happen to people is they become extremely heightenedly focused and attentive to certain levels of experience and completely miss other levels of it. You know, then meditation becomes more like a obsession.
Well, for example, this lady talked about getting irritated at the bus being late. And my training would have been to observe that irritation.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you observe something, it inevitably changes anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So that way you would get through to other areas that we normally block out anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've already widened the meditation to include getting upset at the bus, which most people wouldn't regard as a standard meditation technique. But you see already, you see, when you just do meditation just purely mindfulness of breathing, then we miss out things like being fed up with the bus being late. So actually, even though that meditation on breathing is very valuable, you also have to extend that to include other areas where we get activated in order to learn release.
But not with the aim of changing them.
Well, no. But the aim is to change by themselves.
Yeah.
That's their nature. Awareness is curative in itself, therapeutic in itself. But we change the extent in which we can change the boundary in which our awareness works. For example, so it's not just limited to mindfulness of breathing, it's also changed the boundary. So right now I'm in, you know, talking with my neighbour, then you can extend the boundary of awareness to include all that as well. So, you know, its awareness is curative and therapeutic, provided it addresses the relevant areas. Yeah? And sometimes those relevant areas are areas that we're not aware of. You know, so we need to actually extend the boundaries of awareness to include all these bits that we're either so compulsive in that they just happen, we hardly even know them happen, or we're extremely resistant to being aware of them. you know, like, I didn't want to do that, I just thought, you know, embarrassing, awkward. So you've all these kind of shadow areas in our lives where we're spiteful or confused or miserable. Pathetic. You know, you want to get your awareness to include those. Then so it's the widening of the boundary. Because it can be the case that, you know, you get very good and clear in certain areas. And because you're good at that, that's where you go. And so you also want to go to places where you're not so good. You know, it's like the story that the judo master, and he sees his student is getting very good at a particular throw. Very good at a particular throw. So he says, next time you're in combat, you can't use that throw. You have to start to use the ones you're not very good at. So you get a more holistic skill from it. That's like widening, changing the boundaries of your awareness, widening it.
Sometimes I feel you can be aware of something, but I still, you know, get aware of that feeling ever since, but I feel stuck in it. And I'm aware of doing it, but feeling that way. So it's very hard to shift it.
It's awareness, or the word is chitta. It's like the potential for just pure knowing, but it is the potential that is continually getting programmed. So it gets programmed energetically. So we find ourselves coming into areas where you're kind of aware, but also you realize all these involuntary reflexes start happening. Yeah? You start bluffing or defending, or, you know, and you don't want to, it just happens. Because your awareness is not as strong as the activation. Or you might say your mindfulness is not strong. In those kind of wobbly areas, you just keep coming back to, well, you know, who's aware of this, or where's the center right now, or where am I right now? Because, you know, we have, you know, the mind, we have awareness, which is the knowing, and energy, which is the thing which is to do with the basic resource of activity, is energy. And actually our minds are both aware, but they also function. They produce functioning programs. They decide, they define, they deny, they affirm, they direct. Yeah? That's the function, that's the activity. It's called the sankhara, the activation. Yeah? So, awareness is always there, but sometimes it's like space in this room is always here, but sometimes there's 500 people in here, you wouldn't notice it anymore, even though the space hasn't gone anywhere. So it's like when there's a lot of activity, you know, your ability to really be with awareness becomes less, because there's so much stuff going on that has it's almost its own momentum ricocheting around. And it's like, you know, where's the pass mark? If there's one person here, do I miss the space? No. 20? No. 30? No. 50? 80? 150? You know? So it's like, there's a certain amount of activity that you can maintain the sense of spacious, unmoving presence with, and some that you just start to leak. You know? So we come to that place where the energy is starting to overwhelm, and then, right, now where are you now? So you always come back to the sense of presence. And so that means that that's a very important point, because that's the place where, you know, you have to review what is causing you to get active. And often a very, very simple underlying messages. It can make you happy, this will make you safe, this will be something you can feel solid in. And they're all illusions. But even though you know, you don't know it yet, you know, something still says, go for this one, you'll be. And you go, what will you be? Because essentially awareness is not self, it's empty. There's such a strong pull into being something definable, called bhava, becoming, that particular, however, whatever baits on that hook, whether it's going to be, I'm going to be an arahant, or I'm going to eat the banana and feel happy and full, something's something to do. And then you get active, and then you lose balance. And then we get into this kind of, often involuntary, it's not a decision, it's an involuntary reflex. So that's why you can't decide not to be attached. You have to go to the place of hooking, attachment, just where it's catching you, and witness that. Try to bring awareness into that, more full awareness into it. So when we try to cut it off, the problem could be we lose awareness. We should get another set of activity, cutting off activity. Can you be aware of the place of hooking and really widen and deepen? How is that? And you start to sense these kind of reflex energies for what they are. And then, there's a plate of time or occasion when you don't go into it. Something doesn't ever crystallize. And then that's a little bit gone. A little bit of hook that's worn off. But it's a delicate process. Between, becoming and non-becoming, there's a fine line. And it's the fine line between becoming and non-becoming that you aim for. Non-becoming means no. Becoming is yes. Somewhere in the midst between that, it's kind of. But it takes time, process. Okay. Ding. Open that.